Hello, and welcome to Teacher Tales, a podcast from the spirit of teaching. This is your host, Linda Markley, and I invite you to join me and my guests as we get curious, explore, discover, and learn more about what is really at the heart of teaching. In each episode, we will hear the story of a teacher, what called them to teach, what are their greatest joys and challenges in teaching, what inspires them, and what are their hopes, dreams, and vision for the education of children. We will learn more about the greatest lessons they have taught and also the greatest lessons they have learned. No checklists, no standards, no reports, no paperwork, and no data. Just stories from their hearts to our hearts on a journey to celebrate what really matters in the true spirit of teaching. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Teacher Tales. And I have a superstar teacher here today. I'm going to let him introduce himself and tell you a little bit about himself, and then we'll dive right into his superstardom.
All right. Well, hi, everybody. My name is Nathan Campbell, and I am the ACTFL 2026 National Language Teacher of the Year. And I just finished my whirlwind tour, so to speak, of all the regional conferences, plus the JNCL Nicholas Language Advocacy Days in Washington, D.C. And as I settle back in here at Manheim Central High School, where I live and teach, I'm excited to just kind of get back into the groove of teaching and being with my students. So just real quickly, I am a Spanish teacher at Manheim Central High School in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I live in the community where I teach, and I even have my own children as my students. My lucky son, if you attend any conferences, you may have heard a little bit about him because I've used him in some presentations, but he has had me for 7 of 8 semesters of Spanish and has, and I'm proud to say, earned the seal of biliteracy. So yes, that's a little bit about me, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation here.
Yeah, well, I did not know that you had your son as your student. And very similarly, I had both my daughters. I have two daughters, and I had the one only in middle school for 2 years, but the younger one I had all the way through AP Spanish. She also took AP through AP French. She got fives on her AP exams and everything, and just, I mean,
That's
was it
awesome.
was such a delight to be able to teach her and everything. It's very special. It's special to have your own child in your class. There were challenges maybe with my older daughter. She didn't necessarily want, you know, that sort of this is my mom sort of thing. Like, no, well, we have the same last name. Yeah, I kind of know her, but my younger daughter was like, yeah, that's my mom right there. You know, so it's funny how it can be different. How have your kids reacted to you being their teacher?
Yeah, so it's interesting. My son, he definitely was very excited to have me. It actually kind of became his persona in high school. He's a senior now. He's actually getting ready to graduate this, well, in another month, I guess. But he, you know, he started with me the spring of his freshman year, and a lot of his friends were also in the class. So I've known so many of them. You know, there's no hiding it since we live and teach in the same district. A lot of the kids know exactly who I am. They knew that he was coming. And my son is also deaf, but and wears cochlear implants. And so since he's pretty well known, because there are no other, there's one other hard of hearing person in our school, but he's the only one that wears cochlear implants in our entire district right now. So he's, people just know him, you know, they recognize him. And he's also been pretty front and center in his class too. But how he's reacted to me, the very first day, I was wondering what he was going to call me. But since I still go by professor or, you know, profe or senor, they call me any of those things. It worked for him to just call me senor. And he's even at home, he'll sometimes call me senor. It's humorous. In fact, somebody at church asked him, like, oh, is he a better teacher or a father? And I was like, oh my gosh, how's he gonna respond to that? And so I actually just cut him off. I was like, I'm sure I'm a better teacher than I am a father sometimes. And he was like, no. Of course, you're a great dad and teacher. So it's been fun. You have to be careful. And you know this as a teacher, trying not to use them as examples all the time. I actually, throughout the years, like I actually would use pictures of them as kids. Both my children, I have a daughter who's actually, she's actually in eighth grade. I haven't had her yet. She's coming up next year and I'll have her next year. But They both are in a lot of my pictures. They're in because I'll use my family photos for things, so I have to watch what pictures I have. And sometimes I've actually changed some of them out for my son, especially as he moved up through the levels, because some of them might be embarrassing to them, and I didn't want to embarrass them, so I was trying to be careful. He's a little less concerned about that. My daughter, I think she's gonna freak out if I have any pictures of her in any examples, because she's much more aware of that image issue. So it'll be curious to see how she responds. But she's also excited to study with me. My wife actually also teaches at the high school, and she's a German teacher. So the two of us together make up two-thirds of our department. And so she's pushing for the kids to take German. She was always pushing for them to take German or both languages. But both of them are like, we know that mom would actually hug us and kiss us in class. Dad's not going to do any of that. So they took Spanish. Both of them want to study with me.
Oh, that's so funny. No, with my younger daughter, by then I was making learning stations and I was doing a lot of hands-on things. And so I had taken themes and put them in Tupperware containers. So like
Oh,
when we
yeah.
were doing the doctor, I had like their childhood play doctor kit,
Oh,
and then
yes.
their Weebles, for the house, and paper dolls, and those became my learning stations. And so
Yeah.
my younger daughter, I'd break one out, and she's like, "Hey, that's my blah blah blah. Where'd that come from?" And
Oh, that's
so it
funny.
became a joke. The kids would all be like, hold up things and say, "Was this yours? Was this yours?"
That's funny. I
But
could see
she.
that.
And yeah, same thing, family photos and stuff like that. But I also got a lot of work out of her because she would be stuck after school with me for a couple of hours. So I'd be like, can you grade these papers or can you cut these things out or can you? She was very good with a computer. And one thing that she did, that's well, she went to film school and she's a graphic designer. So she was even into it back then. So I used those artistic skills for her to, like, we'd go on a field trip and she would take the footage from the video the kids took, because all the kids took
Oh,
turns
that's
doing
cool.
videos. They had tasks to do. And she would put them together as a little film, and then the kids would get copies of it. And that really builds a community. And so she kind of became a little bit of the connection or the glue that kind of brought the class together. So like what you were saying about your son, and everybody knows him, and it becomes like part of the family at school,
Oh, for
that sort
sure.
of thing.
Yeah,
So it's
he and
not so
his
bad as
buddies
we
would.
think.
Yeah, he and his buddies come. They still come every morning. Well, they did ever since he had class with me. They would come every morning, hang out right before the bell rang to go to classes. And he has no longer comes into school for first block because he has a dual enrollment at a local university. But his friends still come in. So it's just funny because even without him, they've maintained the tradition of being in my classroom before school.
Well, that's the thing too, teaching high school, like they'd be blended classes.
Yeah.
So when my daughter graduated, the same thing, kids that were in her class or knew her would still come in my classroom because they had not graduated yet. And of course,
That's
when
funny.
we traveled, like what we were talking about earlier, you really create a bond with them that to this day, they're part of our family, those kids that traveled to Europe with us
Absolutely.
and everything. So I want to kind of shift gears a little bit, but stay on the topic of your son. You mentioned JNCL, and I know as a National Teacher of the Year, you had to have sort of a platform that's part of the interview process and everything. And another thing that you do is you go to Washington, D.C. for, JNCL, which is our national language, and NC. Nicholas, JNCL Nicholas, our national advocacy group, legislators, advocating with them. So tell me a little bit. I know you took your son with you.
It
So tell
did.
me, so how did that go and what was his like perspective on it and
Yeah,
such?
sure, absolutely. So my son actually wants to, his goal, like he's actually declared, by the way, he was accepted and declared, he confirmed, so I can say this safely, to go to Georgetown. So that's not just to begin with, being in DC is his dream. Working in DC has always been his dream. And he specifically wants to be a foreign diplomat. And he'd like to be, I don't know if he'll be a politician someday, but he loves the idea of, working abroad and and working with people to discuss important things. So this, when I knew that I'd be going to Washington, D.C. and meeting with legislators or important people, policymakers, I immediately thought of him and said, "Lucas, would you like to do this?" And he didn't even hesitate. He was like, "Absolutely." He's like, "That'd be so cool to be able to do." And I think there are a lot of students that, you could ask, "Would you like to go talk about, world language policy with, your local legislators or your state or federal legislators?" And they probably would, give you a blank stare, like, "Are you kidding me? There's no way I would ever do that." I know a lot of adults who would be afraid of that. So, he's really outgoing to do that. So we went down and we had a very, very busy day, or weekend, I should say. So we drove down Monday night. We're not far. We're only 2 hours, so we were able to drive down, which was nice. But we drove down to DC, and Monday we spend the day. If for those who have never participated with JNC on Nicholas, they set it up very well. So it's on the campus of American University, and they invite you for the Monday to basically learn about the issues, meet with your state delegation to kind of go through, the process of how you might set up your meetings and decide who's going to talk about what issues. And JNCL Nicholas provides you with different speaking points and important handouts that you can give to the legislators, just so that we are all speaking the same language and making sure that we're advocating for the major issues. So my son participated in all of that on that day, with other students, and there were students from other areas as well that participated. So he wasn't the only one. I think there were, I want to say, 20 or 21, maybe 22 at most students total that participated, which was still amazing.
That is.
And so my son got to be a part of that group. He became a part of our state delegation for Pennsylvania, and we went on Tuesday. We had a very, very busy day. In fact, Lucas and I, we left the hotel at 8 o'clock. We thought we were going to have time to grab dinner or breakfast somewhere. There was so much traffic that we didn't even have time to get breakfast. We went literally from 8 o'clock until I think maybe 5 o'clock. We finally got something to eat because we were just so busy. We had so many meetings all over DC. We met with the legislative staff of both of our senators, and for our local Congress, or for our federal congressman Lloyd Smucker. We didn't get to meet with any of them specifically. We did get a picture actually with Senator McCormick because he happened to be in the hall, which was cool because he stopped and spoke with us, and that was nice. But the staff were fantastic, and my son had an opportunity to kind of share his story. So we gave him the part about Fulbright and talking about the importance of study abroad and funding that. He also talked about why world language was important to him, and also what he plans to do with it and how he sees it being useful in his future. So he also just shared his own story, because really that's what you're doing in DC whenever you're advocating. And you asked a little bit about my platform. My platform really is advocacy and showing people how they can be an advocate, beyond not just in their classroom, but more than, and also in their community. So in that connection, which we can talk about later if you want. But to finish that DC, we actually had a really cool meeting in DC that we were not sure if was going to happen or not. Larry Paska, the executive director of ACTFL, was trying to set up a meeting with the Secretary of Education, which would be Linda McMahon, Secretary McMahon. But she was not available, which we weren't terribly surprised by because she was unavailable last year. In fact, last year they didn't even respond to the invitation. But this year they gave us a meeting with the Assistant Secretary of Education, for K through 12 education. So we met with her, Kirsten Baylor. And since the Department of Education was kind of, dismantled and spread out into different parts of government, we actually met with her at the State Department, which was a whole process to check in and get clearance. Like, it was like a 30-minute process, and all the doors, were sealed, which was really cool. Just the process was cool. But we sat down with the Assistant Secretary of K through 12 Education and also her counterpart at the State Department. Just because that's how it now works. And yeah, we had a 40-minute conversation just about, it was supposed to be a 30-minute conversation, but we had a 40-minute conversation about the importance of world language and how world language, strengthens our economy, strengthens our defense, beyond all of the bridges and connections and cultural understanding that we all know and appreciate. speaking in their language, especially at the State Department. How does this, how, why is this important for government? And it was a really great conversation. My son got to participate in this conversation as well. They asked him questions, they asked me questions. Larry Paska got to respond to some things as well. But just as a general, we walked away just saying, wow, like that was an incredible experience. It was an incredible conversation. And we actually saw them change kind of their perspective a little bit, which was the most important thing. And we just were, we were proud to be a part of that. My son was excited to be able to be a part of that. And it's something, I know he'll take with him in the future.
That's a great story, and you're right, it's all about stories and everything, and as a teacher, it's the same thing, building that community, having stories that you build through relationships and stuff like that, whether it's with your son or the students you travel with and stuff like that. That's some of the greatest form of advocacy that we can do as teachers. And have kids have positive experiences. Parents see the value of the kind of education the kids are getting through world languages and learning about themselves by learning about other cultures and languages. So that's really great. As a participant in JNCL for over 20 years, that's what we discovered as we developed through it was the power of story. Which was an idea I got from my daughter being a film major. She was like, if you can do stories, that's how you hook people, the power of stories. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, so I'm so glad your son got to participate in that and share his dreams for the future and how he uses languages. So I think that's really great. So you're going around the country and seeing the different regional conferences and everything. So what would you say is your greatest takeaway from the conferences? Talking to teachers one-on-one, hearing their stories, because I saw when you were at school, everybody was like clamoring to talk to you and tell you their stories or give you their perspective on things and so.
So I think, the issues that we deal with in our own classrooms, the issues that we're dealing with in our own states and really in our own regions are the issues that everybody's dealing with. So, but it's which isn't surprising. Like, we know that there's a national teacher shortage. We know that there are programs being eliminated at every level, university and in K through 12 education as well. So it's easy to just think, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen to world language education? Where's this going? Are we going to be, are any of us going to have programs and a job in 10 to 15 years with artificial intelligence coming on board? And I would say, as I traveled, in the beginning, like you have those thoughts. I've had those thoughts for, the last 2 or 3 years, if not a couple more than that. But having traveled, having gone to all the regions, having gotten to meet so many amazing educators, I would tell you that my fears are definitely now diminished. Like, I no longer carry that worry as much as I did, because there are so many passionate people, so many people trying to solve these problems and working towards solutions and finding solutions that are working. What we have to do as a national group, as through ACTFL, through our regionals, and through our state conferences, and as leaders in education, is promote those solutions and help, provide those tools to every educator so that they can, advocate for their program before they go on a school board agenda for elimination, so that we can promote our programs to our students and encourage them to become educators, to fill that pipeline, feed that pipeline to university and back into the classroom, so that we can build that loop. I was thinking about this issue. It's like, oh, all these programs around me have been eliminated, but there are still a couple, and we're sending our students there, and they're going and they're doing well. But how do we ever get back to like the golden age of world language, when we had programs, locally with 50 or 60, students in them? And I thought back, at some point this all had to begin from zero. So, if we have to start all over again, and we're not starting from zero right now. We have a lot of information, we have a lot of knowledge that we didn't have when people started these programs years and years ago. I do feel like there's hope. I feel like there's a movement. I feel like the people are recognizing, they're beginning to recognize the power of multilingualism. And we are really investing, people are investing in this and they're seeing the results. And that's what's going to tell our story. It's not going to be the numbers, it's not going to be data. It's going to be what we produce through our programs that's going to advocate for us. So the student's success is our advocacy. How we promote that success is what's going to make people know it. And I feel like that's the biggest thing everybody can do in their own classroom. Each one of us has to advocate by showing the results, like show that our programs are effective, show how students are earning their seal of biliteracy. If your students are taking national language exams and earning, a gold status, promote that, take pictures, share that with your school boards, share that in the community. And then how do we use our language clubs, like Spanish club, German club, whatever, and our different societies to do work in the community that involves multiculturalism and multilingualism to promote that. The more we promote it in the community, the more people are on board. I say to a lot of people that look at our program, like, how are you able to do what you do? And I can tell you, our results have built the trust from the school board and trust from our administration. They literally tell me, I've never been told no. Everything I ask for, I get. And I know that I'm fortunate. I'm lucky to have an administration that recognizes how our program is working well. But they literally don't tell us no. Sometimes I can barely get the question out of my mouth before my principal says yes. Which I'm like, are you sure? I haven't even fin told you what it is yet. And he's like, no, I know it'll be fine. Because they see that it's for the students and they see that it's not self, we're not trying to promote ourselves. We're really trying to do work for our kids and to make them successful. So I think I answered your question.
Yeah, no, you did. You did. And again, going back to that whole, we're advocating for our profession and for our students by what we do in the classroom every day. Invite people in to see what you're doing.
Exactly.
Have your students go out and like we would have a like International Day, and we had a lot of international students in the school that were taking because languages were required. We had to have 3 consecutive years. And so, put on performances. They would do poetry, recitation. They would do dances, songs, perform plays, and people would come, and some of them didn't even know what was being said, but they were trying to support the program, and it was very strong. And then we made connections to the businesses in the community and invited them in, and let kids go on tours and see how languages were used. And we videotaped interviews with businesses or students who had taken languages and gone on and had a career using them, or even just used them in a career that didn't require languages, but it was a benefit. It was a big plus for them. So you have to get those stories out there
Absolutely.
and get them to be heard by other people. The biggest thing with, I mean, and I've told this story so many times, but I think it's appropriate here. You never know when you're going to have that elevator speech or that opportunity, excuse me, to say something to someone that's going to make that difference, like what you were saying when you had the 40-minute talk with the legislator, with the assistant
Secretary,
Secretary of Education. And I was advocating at our state legislator and legislature, and there was a freshman senator, and there were 10 people from Disney that wanted Imagineers and wanted technology. They wanted coding to be in re to replace world languages as a requirement. And I just looked at the freshman senator and I said, at the end of the day, what do you want? Do you want to sit at the table with your family? And I motioned texting, or do you want to sit at the table with your family? And I motioned having a conversation one-on-one, and it completely turned everything around. So stories, making those human connections, showing the relevance and the importance of having that communication from language to language, culture to culture, people to people. So,
100%. Yeah.
yeah.
No, I love that. And I do a lot of work with the state association with our I'm a big fan. I'm a big member of our union and in leadership of our union have been for a long time. And I am I'm an ACE or an advocate for children and education. And it's one of the things that they teach you right away is like have that elevator pitch, have that little, 30-second to 1 minute story that can, change a mind or at least get an in to have a bigger conversation maybe later. And
Well,
yeah.
I think your stories are all very inspirational, especially the ones about your son and everything and those connections and stuff. But just before we close here, because we're getting close on our time, what would be the biggest advice you would give to new teachers coming into the profession?
It's a good question. I actually have a new teacher right across the hall from me right now, and I'm her mentor. And maybe I'm not demonstrating this very well, but I do think a healthy, as a teacher, it's hard. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do, is to find that healthy work-life balance. And just it, this is a job that literally we could do 24/7. There's always something that we want to improve. There's always something that we can grade. There's always something. There's literally always something dot dot dot. And so it's deciding, okay, when do I need to just hit pause? When do I say this is good for today? Next time I'll improve this. I think reflection is important, but knowing when to just pause and just say I've done enough for today, so that you can rest. Because it sounds cliche, but if we aren't taking care of ourselves, then we're not going to be able to be there for anybody. And we have families, we have people that we love outside of this job. This is a job at the end of the day. Yes, we're passionate. Yes, we love our language. We love our students. We love education, hopefully. But we also have families and we are people. And this is how we provide food for our table. It shouldn't necessarily consume us completely. So I think that it's important just to figure out that life work balance and be okay with things being good enough for now. I'm a perfectionist, so that's hard for me to say. That's why I say I don't always live my own advice, but it's good enough for now, and next time I can improve on it. And being okay with that is important. So that would probably be my number one advice.
Yeah, and that's great advice, and for new teachers especially, because they're really trying to prove themselves and they're afraid of that administrator coming through with the clipboard and the checklist and looking literally for everything that they need to improve on. So being able to go home and let that go, and it's also a great role model for kids. The last school I was in was a very high achieving school. The kids were like, if I don't take five AP classes and get fives on all the exams, then I'm a failure. Well, they were putting in all kinds of extra time and all this, and so talking to them and showing them, as well as your colleagues, there's a point where you have to take care of yourself and you have to say, this is enough, this is good enough, and I'm good enough. And that's it, because we are human. We are definitely human,
Absolutely.
and there are a lot of things that can be pulling and tugging at us in a lot of different directions. So that's great advice, and I thank you so much for being on the podcast, and wish you the best of luck at the end of the school year as things wind down, hopefully for you. Not a wind down, not a downhill slide, because sometimes teachers are like, man, I thought I was on the slip and slide or the big one at like a water park,
Oh, yeah, right.
or on a cruise ship where you're just as like a chute and it shoots you out the other end and you're like, what just happened? So that can be teaching sometimes, especially at the end of the school year. But
For sure.
one time through the chute and then you say, that's it, I'm off the ride, I'm going to relax a little bit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have I kind of will be flying off that slide and into like the next ride. So I actually won't even end the school year with my students. I have to leave 3 days early. My colleague and I are taking 10 students to Spain for our exchange program. We'll come home and then we do another trip, and then I'll come home for a little bit and then I go on another trip. So my summer is full of travel, which is what I love. So that's no
Yeah,
com
that's
there's no complaint. It just I don't know if it settles down ever, but it'll
yeah.
be a lot of fun.
No, that's a great reward at the end of a hard working school year. That's great. Well, buen viaje,
Gracias.
and I can't wait to hear all about your travels when you get back.
Very good.
All
It was great
right.
talking with you.
Great talking to you too. Hello again, everyone. This is your host, Linda Markley. and I'd like to invite you to nominate a teacher to be a guest on the podcast and to share their story. All you have to do is go to www.spiritofteaching.org and fill out the nomination form. Again, that's www.spiritofteaching.org. Also, please share, rate, and give some feedback to help us better serve you in the spirit of teaching. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to having you back next time on Teacher Tales.